walk around in the middle of this mess every day and still don't see it. I didn't always see it, either. I spent millions of dollars doing all kinds of research. That's why they can't stop me from saying anything I say, because they know they'll be in trouble if they do. And as far as the white man killing me, they tried that. It doesn't work. I say, you guys, come on. I'm in the phone book. Never had a bodyguard. See, there's a universal God that says to black people, death is better. I made you, but you let these crackers send you to war and you think you have to go instead of thinking death is better? Now think about the hundreds of thousands of blacks they tried to enslave who jumped ship. They don't tell you about that. Jump ship, man. Before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave. Yeah, black people today say that and then go right back to work for white folks. And not just work for them, go out and kill for them. Buffalo soldiers fighting Indians, black soldiers going over to kill yellow people in Vietnam, brown people in Afghanistan and Iraq. And why? It's because we don't know to value ourselves. We know how to make potato salad and do all kind of other BS. We know how to dance, but we don't know there's something inside us. Look here. In the civil rights movement, we took on the mightiest military force that ever existed in the history of the planet, the U.S. government. Martin Luther King Jr., I was with him. Nobody ever heard him say anything trifling about white folks. He was just as meek and humble and brought them to their knees, man. But we don't talk about that because we don't value ourselves. We don't know what we can do, even though we've already seen it. Bill Clinton. If I could talk to Bill Clinton, I would apologize to him on behalf of black folks. Hear me out now. Black folks tricked him. The first black president. They went in that big old black pot and said, here, white boy, you're black. And then they went back in that black pot and said, here, Obama, you ain't black enough. What kind of foolish behavior is this? You should don't hear the Ku Klux Klan telling Obama he's too white. I'd apologize to Bill Clinton because black folks tricked him. They've got him so confused he set up his office around black folks in Harlem. It only sped up gentrification, and now most of the blacks have been displaced. When he was young, one of my sons came to me crying. He said, Daddy, my brothers and sisters are laughing at me. I said, why? He said, I built me a castle, and I make like it's my house. Do you see anything wrong with that? I said, how old are you, boy? He said, 8 years old. I said, ain't nothing wrong with that until you start using it as your address. So I tell Bill Clinton, there's nothing wrong with being black as long as you're only playing, but when you try to use it as your address. I've got some questions for Bill Clinton. Have you and your wife and daughter ever been standing on a street corner in New York and had a cab pass you by because you were the black president? Has Chelsea ever been pulled over by white police because her daddy's the black president? Mr. President, do you know what it feels like to be a black person, to be a congresswoman or a lieutenant governor or somebody with 12 doctorates and be driving down the street and hear the police siren? You start squeezing that steering wheel tight and they pass by you and you thank God? Damn, thanking God. You didn't do anything wrong in the first place. When you know what that feels like, then you're black. Until then, that's what this is about. Now look at some things Bill Clinton did and ask yourself if this sounds like somebody who ought to be called the first black president. Black folks should have seen it coming back in 1992, but we didn't. He ran for president that year. He wanted to prove he was tough on crime. Like I said before, anytime you hear the phrase tough on crime substitutes blacks for crime, and you get what's really going on. Before the New Hampshire primary, Clinton flew to Arkansas to oversee an execution because he was still the governor there. The black man they were executing was named Ricky Ray Rector. This is how pitiful Rector was. On the last day of his life, when they gave him his last meal, he asked if they could save his dessert for him until the next morning. Okay. That poor brother had the mind of a child, but that didn't stop them from killing him, and when it was over, Clinton said, "No one can say I'm soft on crime." But we hadn't seen anything yet. That fall, he was elected president, and his war on black folks really got started then. He scrapped aid to families with dependent children and replaced it with temporary assistance for needy families. The key word there is temporary, because suddenly there was a 5-year lifetime limit on welfare and food stamps, and if you were ever caught with so much as an ounce of weed, you wouldn't get a dime. You also wouldn't get into public housing if you were caught holding or selling drugs. So if you got locked up, you might as well have stayed locked up. Because if you got out of prison and your only plan was to head home to the projects, you would be homeless. Not that there was much public housing left once Clinton got through. The money they had used to build projects, it went to building prisons instead. And which people do you think those prisons were for? There's your first black president. Al Sharpton, the Pope, and white supremacy. Let me show you something about how white supremacy works. Before I do, I've got to say a few things about Al Sharpton. Did you know that he is probably the most powerful black person in America? He had a TV show on a white network, MSNBC, 5 days a week. Now it's just on Sundays, which meant that a black man was talking to millions of Americans every day. Every time there's a racial situation in New York City and it looks like there's going to be trouble, they go get Al to cool things down. Say what you want about that brother. He is an American original. Where did somebody like him come from? He was born in Brooklyn in 1954. He preached a sermon when he was 4 years old, was ordained when he was 10. That little boy went on tour with Mahalia Jackson. When he wasn't but 15, in 1969, Jesse Jackson named him youth director of Operation Breadbasket, and in 18, he was youth director of Shirley Chisholm's campaign. The man could draw attention like nobody you ever saw. He was an attention magnet. And he used that magnetism to keep the focus on what was happening to black people. If something happened to black folks in New York City, there was Al. In 1986, when 3 black men were assaulted in Howard Beach, Queens, and one of them got killed when he was chased into the path of a car, there was Al, leading a march through Howard Beach, making sure everybody was aware of the case until New York Governor Mario Cuomo appointed a special prosecutor. In 1989, when Yusuf Hawkins, 16 years old, got shot and killed in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, there was Al, leading marches. In the 1990s, when Gavin Cato and Amadou Diallo were killed, there was Al. Some people didn't like the way Al did things, but he called attention to injustices that wouldn't have gotten as much notice otherwise. And in doing that, he became prominent nationally. He ran for the U.S. Senate from New York in 1992, and maybe he didn't win, but let me tell you, a lot of people voted for that dude. And now he's in front of millions of TV viewers. A lot of black folks have a problem with his hairstyle, but when something goes wrong, he's the first called. He's a powerful man. And he's a preacher. Now, wouldn't you think that if the Pope came through New York City, Al would be one of the people he'd see? Think again. When the Pope came to New York, the only black place he went to was Harlem, and Al wasn't invited. And all those crackers, including the mayor and all of the rest Al thought were friends, they went. David Dinkins, the first black mayor of New York, wasn't invited either. The Pope comes through in his Pope-mobile, hugging all those little white sick children, but when he went to Africa a month later, he didn't touch a black kid. So who is this guy? I'll tell you who he is. The latest representative of white supremacy. Donald Trump. If you ever saw Donald Trump's television shows, you saw that he was brilliant. So how did he get so stupid all at once? Something else you've got to wonder. If I went to apply for a job collecting garbage, they would ask me to bring in my last year's tax returns. But Trump runs for president, and he doesn't bring his in, and y'all tolerate it? And now he's won, and you can't see where this is going? People have asked me what we do now that Trump is president. There's nothing to do. It's over. We're in decline now. The Romans, the Greeks, the Egyptians, all of those empires fell. It's our turn now. We didn't see what was happening, and now it's too late. We want to believe that everything was all right until the 2016 election, but it's never been all right. Take the Electoral College. Most folks who vote don't know that whoever wins the popular vote doesn't necessarily win the election. Most people could vote for me or you, but if the voters are fool enough to do that, the government could bring out the military, and that would be the end of that. So this is not a free democratic society. We think we're a democracy because reporters interview celebrities or talk to an executive here or there, or the man on the street interviews. How come nobody ever interviews rich people? How come nobody ever interviews Henry Ford's family? The Rockefeller family, the DuPont family. How come we don't hear about the money they give and whom they give it to? We know one thing. If Donald Trump were doing something the super powerful didn't like, they shoot him, just like they did John F. Kennedy. Think about the time the Secret Service grabbed somebody because someone else yelled, "He's got a gun." And they whisked Kennedy off the stage, and then later they said, "We didn't find a gun." And we don't question that. Are you going to ask the government where the gun is that killed Kennedy? The people who are doing the shootings and killings are also in charge of investigating them, and we don't see anything wrong with that? Here's where we are now. The super rich people own the networks. If you're a reporter for CBS, NBC, or ABC, you can turn a story in and they can legitimately tell you, "Well, I don't know if we can go with that. We might get a lawsuit." And it's been like that for a long time. Walter Cronkite, the anchor of CBS Evening News from 1962 to 1981, they called him the most trusted man in America. Interviewed President Lyndon Baines Johnson on 5 different days, Monday through Friday. The interviews were supposed to run later. So someone called me and said, "CBS and Cronkite just interviewed LBJ. Can I get you a copy?" I said, "Hey, yeah, but just leave it somewhere where I can get it so nobody thinks I stole it." Now, up until that point, I thought LBJ had had something to do with Kennedy's murder. That was because of what had happened at the 1960 Democratic National Convention. At the time, LBJ was the Senate Majority Leader, the most powerful man in Congress, maybe in all of Washington. He was drunk when he came out on stage at the time when they nominated him to be Kennedy's vice president. He said, "I have more power in one day in the position I'm in now than the president will have in 4 years." At one point, he left the stage, but then Sam Rayburn, the Speaker of the House, whispered something in his ear, and LBJ came back to the stage and said, "I accept the nomination." So I figured Rayburn had told LBJ something then about how Kennedy was going to be killed. Now watch this. When he was interviewed by Walter Cronkite, here's what LBJ said, which changed my whole view. He said he believed Kennedy's murder was a conspiracy, and he believed that Lee Harvey Oswald was part of it, but a small part. I said, "Wow, man, he's saying that?" When the 5-part interview ran, the part where LBJ said that he thought Kennedy's death had been a conspiracy was cut out. I saw Walter Cronkite about 2 weeks later, and I said, "Hey, man, what happened to the part that was cut?" He said, "Well, CBS overruled me." I said, "But you're the man people trust. My grandmother doesn't call CBS Uncle Walty. She calls you Uncle Walty." That's where the trust breaks down, but people don't know it. What does that tell you? There is no democracy here. No freedom of information. The only free people are the ones with enough money to control the information you get. And this has been going on all along, but we want to believe that it has just started happening. If there's any God at all, and there is, and that God doesn't do something to punish America, then that God owes Sodom and Gomorrah a serious apology. Because with technology and other things we have, the U.S. government does things to make those thugs look like angels. Let's look at America for a minute. We talk about the right to vote. The right to elect is not important if you don't also have the right to select. But who picks the candidates? It goes back to folks with money. But who gets blame when things go wrong? Us. For the 2016 election, they said, oh, black folks aren't coming out for the early vote. Right then, they were fixing to blame things on us. Oh, if black folks had come out, Hillary would have won. Well, when Obama beat Hillary, they blamed that on us, too. They said it was because of the black vote. Now, if you were alive and on this planet at the time, you know that a lot of black folks were supporting the Clintons. Bob Johnson, who owned BET, was talking about Obama's drug problems. But when Hillary lost to Trump, suddenly it was black folks' fault. If I could, I would take all black folks to Germany and let them study the Jews. The difference between the Jews and what Hitler did to them and us here and what's being done to us, the Jews never thought they were part of Hitler's system. But we think we're part of the American system of government. There was no Jewish Secretary of State under Hitler. Jews weren't going to fight in wars for Germany, but we fight for the United States. And to believe that we are part of the American system is like believing white people can cook chitlins better than black folks. I am so sick and tired of seeing a black person shot in the back, shot dead, followed by people saying, not all cops are bad. You know how many lawyers get disbarred every year? But you never hear, not all lawyers are bad. You know how many doctors lose their medical licenses? But you never hear anybody talking about, not all doctors are bad. Police departments are filthy. If I pay a lawyer, I don't expect him to sue me. If I go to a doctor, he's not supposed to give me a disease. But we pay taxes so cops will protect us, and they shoot us instead. And the response is, not all cops are bad? And still we think we're part of America. America is afraid. That's why Trump was elected. You got white families that would be in their fifth generation of sending their kids to Princeton, Yale, Harvard, Stanford, but they've got their kids in community college. You've got white families where the children have three or four PhDs, but they're living in their parents' basements. Those families see something wrong. So that's what Trump tapped into. It's like if you and your child are hit by a car, and an ambulance driver is somebody you seen on TV calling black folks nigger. But you have no choice but to go with him to the hospital, thinking it makes any difference what you do. That's what fear does. It's the same fear that Trump exploited and other Republicans exploited to make us afraid of Islam. Going into the 2016 election, we knew something big was planned. What happened? Trump's victory was the action of a handful of thug pimp punks with money, not millions of fool voters. Not even the CIA or the FBI. There's something going on in this country that scares the people whose job it is to scare people. So we need to be careful, because we don't know how big this is. Ben Carson and the operation to separate the Bender twins. Patrick and Benjamin Bender were twins, born in February 1987. They were joined at the head. The operation to unjoin them took place at Johns Hopkins the following September. Dr. Ben Carson, now the U.S. Secretary for Housing and Urban Development, gets the credit for separating them. But did he? If you paid attention during the 2016 campaign, you'd have thought he wasn't even in the room when that operation took place. Now let's look at it. The whole time he campaigned for president, he never mentioned the operation. Everybody else mentioned what they did that's positive. If he did it, Why didn't he talk about it? Ralph Ellison, author of Invisible Man. The novel Invisible Man was published in 1952. It's about a young black man who has all kinds of adventures as he makes his way from the South to the North. Sold a whole mess of copies. Won the National Book Award. Black American Ambassadors. Black America becoming prominent around the world in the 20th century really had to do with non-white people around the world. America had to show them something that would fit into their culture, because the only thing the United States was taking around the world was white supremacy, racism, and war. To make themselves look good, the government had to export something else. Let me give you an example. The white folks in the U.S. government appropriated billions of dollars toward building things in Africa. Why? Because there were natural resources there. In fact, there's no place in Africa where the United States has built anything where there weren't natural resources involved. No place where they built schools or brought medicine where there weren't natural resources. Now, to make it look good, the United States had to send over somebody who looked like people in Africa. It had to get some famous black ambassadors. Didn't matter if they had experience. So they took Satchmo, Louis Armstrong, and made him an ambassador of goodwill. So no black folks around the planet would think we didn't have black ambassadors. You see, that was part of the trick. They didn't send over black entertainers who had attitudes. So Satchmo, Pearl Bailey, these are folks people overseas were listening to, so they didn't see anything wrong with America. You cannot read anything negative that Satchmo or Pearl Bailey said about this country. Angela Davis. In 1970, a 17-year-old African-American named Jonathan Jackson went into a Marin County, California courtroom and took hostages to try to free the Soledad brothers. Three African-American inmates from Soledad Prison charged with the murder of a white prison guard. Johnson had with him guns owned by Angela Davis. After those white folks got killed, including a judge, Davis became a fugitive from justice. The deaths of Otis Redding and Sam Cooke. The singer Otis Redding, a week before his plane crashed, was stupid enough to have a press conference and say Jews will not control black music anymore. 2 weeks from now, we'll have a company. And the next week, his plane went down. Same thing with the singer Sam Cooke. When he got shot at that motel in Los Angeles by the motel's female manager after he supposedly tried to rape a woman there? Whatever happened, Sam was doing the same thing Otis was doing, talking about controlling black music. Instead of focusing on that, the media give you a scandal, and everybody buys into that. That's all they can talk about. Ooh, he was trying to rape somebody and got shot. Jesus. I go all over the world. I go to China and check out the Christian communities there. In paintings of Jesus, he looks Chinese. When I go to India, the pictures of Jesus make him look Indian. I go to Brazil, Jesus looks Brazilian. I come back home to America, go in the black community, into black churches, and Jesus is a white man. And you wonder what's wrong with your children and why they don't love themselves? That's that slave mentality again. Christ was born in a place where there were nothing but black people. And when he picked his disciples, he picked not only 11 Europeans, but 11 Englishmen? Peter, Paul, Matthew? Where do names like that come from where Jesus was born? All 12 of them were white boys, except the one who killed Christ. He's an Arab Jew. Judas. Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice had more PhDs than the president's whole cabinet, but they called her Condi. And black people didn't even see anything wrong with it. They didn't call Madeleine Albright Maddie. Bill Clinton's attorney general, Janet Reno, did they call her Janie? Hell no. But it didn't bother Condoleezza Rice. See how we've been programmed? evolution and revolution. See, revolution is the extension of evolution. Evolution is a gradual and mysterious change that leads to revolution, which is quick change. When a woman gets pregnant, the first 9 months of pregnancy is evolution. When her water breaks, that's revolution, quick change. It's time to change the world. Chapter 4. Making something out of nothing. My grandmother doesn't have space in her head to believe there could be a Baptist on Mars. When my wife Lil and I first got together, I said, if you want this to work, because I don't give a damn, it's not about love. It's about can you be lovable? And I guess she heard me. We've been married 58 years. That's lovability, not love. Love's associated with being evil when you think somebody else is looking at your woman. Being lovable is not. But we take the wrong idea from messed up love songs. The blues. The worst music I ever heard that promotes violence, greed, and misogyny wasn't hip-hop. It was black blues. We're the only group of men on planet Earth who sing derogatory words about our women. I caught my baby in bed with my best friend. 1, 2, 3, 4, give me some more, shake your moneymaker. Anytime anybody says shake your moneymaker, they're talking about your vagina. When you make money with it, you're a hoe. Men and women dance to this kind of thing. Listen to hillbilly music and see if they ever sing anything derogatory about the women they're living in their trailers with. All they say is, baby, I'm sorry. Yet nobody complains about the blues. When I was growing up, people took pride in the blues. I listened to that crap and I thought, I'm a black man and between me and this black woman, I'm the trifling one. But our songs don't reflect that. In St. Louis, when I was growing up, nobody came there but blues singers. Where were you going to see another